Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
This is the 49ers Insider Podcast brought to you by Big O Tires, and I'm joined this week, or I should say tonight, because there's a lot of talk about it. Probably in the coming days we'll be doing more podcasts as we did all week in Miami. But I'm joined by Jennifer Lee Chan. She is my partner in crime covering the 49ers all season long. And then the hired hand we bring in for the postseason, Scott Baer, covers the Raiders. Working primarily covering the Chiefs, but right. You got a good little mix of 49ers and Chiefs week here in Miami. And Scott, we love you, but we're going to start off with Jennifer.
As you should.
Yeah, let's just start off with the takeaways from this one. The 49ers lose Super Bowl 54 to the Kansas City Chiefs, 31-20, a game they had in hand, kind of. I'm not sure you ever have it in hand against Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs offense, but Jennifer, just your takeaways after seeing this and being in the locker room of the 49ers.
It was the most despondent locker room we've been in a long time. I mean, even when they were started out 0-9, 4-12 season, it was never like this in the locker room. They've always had hope. They've always been kind of up, like they had something else to look forward to, but there was always a next game. This time there isn't the next game.
There is not a next game. And Scott, I know you were over there where some of the players from the 49ers, some of the star players that they bring over to media briefings. And what were you kind of... What kind of caught your eye when you were in there seeing some of how these 49ers responded to the loss?
I mean, it seemed like the oxygen had been taken from the room, and the life that I had experienced covering the 49ers over the last month back in Santa Clara was completely gone. And I think tight end George Kittle summed it up best with one single word: disbelief. That they thought they were a special group and a team that was going to come in here and show that they were more complete and more dynamic, and to have it a two-score lead late and to let it go, you could just tell that there was severe disappointment. This is a team that's not used to this. They've lost three games by very small margins, and this isn't a team that blows leads, and if they do, they definitely come back. And I think that they were a little shell-shocked by what happened in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, they were beat. You know, the team, you know, I don't think it was a big surprise that Patrick Mahomes led, you know, the drives that ultimately gave the Chiefs the lead. But I think from my standpoint, the thing that kind of surprised me was that when the 49ers offense had a chance to put this game away, they had a 10-point lead, they got the ball back after Tarvarius Moore's interception, they didn't cash in. And then once again, they gave the ball up. And then, you know, they had that final drive, but, you know, they had an opportunity to go down the field in about 2 minutes, 85 yards, and they didn't get the job done there. But, I mean, I guess the thing that surprises me was that the offense did not have any answers for the Chiefs.
You know, Kyle Shanahan's done such a good job at adjusting when he could to opposing defenses, and it just didn't seem like he could do it as well this time. They stopped the run, which has been so much a part of their offense the last two games, especially in the playoffs, and they just couldn't get it going again. And, you know, you could kind of also say that Kyle was a little bit conservative at the end of the first quarter. There was kind of a question of why didn't he use a timeout and save a little time on the clock when they were going to get the ball back. I know he was a little afraid to, like, give the ball back to the Chiefs, but really there's a little conservative play calling there and kind of in the fourth quarter as well.
Yeah, so probably the one that, you know, a lot of people were second guessing at the time was they didn't call a timeout after the third down play, and instead of getting the ball back with, say, a minute 40 or so, they got the ball back with like 59 seconds left and called a couple running plays, see if they could pop one. So I know what he was thinking was that the 49ers were in a 10-10 tie. Patrick Mahomes, you don't want to give him another shot. And so the 49ers knew they were getting the ball coming out of halftime. So the last thing you want to do is go into halftime trailing when you get the ball back with that amount of time left. But here's what Kyle Shanahan had to say about attempting that two-minute drive at the end of the first half, or I should say maybe not attempting that two-minute drive. We did consider it, but where we got the ball and the fact it was 10-10 and they had three timeouts, if we could have gotten an explosive run on first down, we would have. I want to say we got a four-yard run and we let the clock run a little bit to get it down. But no, we were good with that situation. We would do that every single time, especially with us starting with the ball in the third quarter. Once I realized we did get the first down, they did take a shot, and then they tried that long pass to George Kittle, which it looked like the 49ers were going to get a field goal at the end of the first half, but kind of a controversial or questionable offensive pass interference on George Kittle.
Yeah, and George addressed that a couple different times with the exact same line, which is just that I'm not the guy making the calls. Somebody threw a flag, and that's something that I'm going to have to live with. I thought it was clear from his body language and his face and his reaction to the question that he didn't agree with the call. I believe on the Fox broadcast they were talking a lot about him extending his arm and that may have been a trigger point to throw the flag. But it was clear, even though he didn't say it expressly, it was definitely clear that George Kittle didn't agree with the call.
Well, what's also clear is that John Lynch didn't agree with Kyle Shanahan not calling a timeout.
I mean, yeah.
The Fox cameras during the broadcast showed John Lynch in his booth signaling for a timeout, and I just wonder how that plays.
Yeah, it was definitely a contrast of opinions by those two, which hasn't happened very often. Those two have been pretty much in sync throughout their whole tenure together, so I'm sure they'll talk about it, but I don't think it fractures their relationship at all.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact of the matter is the 49ers had this game in control, and they had it in control in the fourth quarter, and now, you know, Kyle Shanahan has to deal with that stigma once again, where, you know, he was the offensive coordinator when the Atlanta Falcons had a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 51. That was just 3 years ago. He and Tevin Coleman were on that team, and now for him to experience this again with a 10-point lead with, you know, what was it, 8 minutes left in this game, to see it get away from them. I mean, where do you think the second guessing lies?
I think it's pulled at the end of the first half, and it definitely happens in that fourth quarter where they could not convert the ball. They couldn't convert their downs. I mean, he's been so creative in his play calling, being able to open lanes for Raheem Mostert, for Tevin Coleman, and they just couldn't get it done. I mean, there was that time where Joe Staley was out.
That was actually the
drive where they scored a touchdown. You know, that was after Jimmy Garoppolo threw the interception.
Yeah, I thought for the most part Garoppolo was sharp. You know, he made that one interception through that pass, ill-advised pass, as he was being hit. I don't know if he was trying to throw it out of bounds or not, but something where you just can't put that ball up there. And then probably, you know, the pass that he'll be thinking a lot about, as will Emmanuel Sanders, was the deep ball, where Sanders had a step or two, got behind the defense on that 3rd and 10, and I mean, when that ball, I could actually see the flight of the ball, and it looked like it was going to be well over Sanders' head. But, you know, when you see Sanders break into the clear, I'm thinking, wow, I wonder if they left too much time for Patrick Mahomes.
Right. And it was crazy because Emmanuel Sanders was part of the entire 49ers team is frustrated, and as they should be after what transpired here at Hard Rock Stadium. But Emmanuel took three questions. The first one was, what route did you run there? And he answered back, what route did you think I ran? The reporter said, a post. And then he said, do you think that the ball was a bit overthrown, that he didn't give you a real chance to make a play on the ball? And he said, you saw where it landed. You saw where I was. And then he moved forward again, and didn't like that question, got up and walked out. I mean, frustration definitely palatable, I think, because he didn't even have a chance to make a play on that ball. I know there's a lot that goes into it. It's hard to throw it 50 yards and land it on a dime, but that was a missed opportunity there.
A couple of the other players on the offense did agree that they thought that was going to be the game changer, that ball, and a couple of them said, yeah, it was overthrown. I mean,
there's no doubt. Yeah. It was overthrown by like 10 yards.
But, I mean, a lot of them did think that that was going to be the play. I mean, everybody stood up and thought that was going to be the one that was going to put them back in the lead and lead them on to their Super Bowl victory.
Yeah, so, you know, Emmanuel Sanders comes in here to the 49ers and provided, you know, he came and did what he was supposed to do, I think. You know, the numbers were kind of up and down. He really hadn't been much of a factor here in the last few weeks. But, you know, he and Deebo Samuel really took over the 1 and 2 spots. Kendrick Bourne had a good game. You know, he made some big third down receptions. But, man, that, you know, the wide receiving core was basically just those guys. Mm-hmm. And Richie James really didn't play much. Dante Pettis was inactive for this game after not playing in the past, you know, month or so. So, you know, when the 49ers look at what they got to do in the offseason, you know, they got to get Trent Taylor healthy. They got to figure out if Jalen Hurts can play. But I think one of the things that you see it with every team is that this team's not coming back. You know, these 53 right. guys aren't coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever. 35, 40 of them will be back. And I think that that's kind of where I mentioned to some people, Mike McGlinchey talked about it. Like, that's kind of the sad part of this is they like, you know, everybody likes each other and they felt like there was a bond there. But this 2019-20, you know, team that's played into 2020, it's going to be a different team next year and the expectations are different. And that's probably as much of the sadness as all these guys failed in their opportunity to add to their jewelry collection, but also that so many of these guys won't be in the locker room when they report back for the offseason program.
And, you know, I asked Mike McGlinchey how he felt about this not being the one that they got for Joe Staley, and he could barely get any words out. He was so despondent about the fact that they really wanted to get one for him, and the entire offensive line just was, they couldn't really even get their feelings out. They were so sad, really. I mean, Joe Staley doesn't know whether he's going to come back or not. He was on the brink of retiring when Kyle and John came into the building. I asked McGlinchey also, are you going to do anything about trying to get Joe Staley to stay? And he said, nope, he's going to let him make that decision. He's going to stay out of it.
Well, Staley did sign a, you know, extension in the offseason. Do you think there's a chance he might retire?
I mean, maybe not now that he can't walk off into the sunset with a ring on his finger, but there is a chance. I mean, going through this, what he did this year was so different. I mean, he hasn't had seasons where he's gone out with several injuries where he did. Granted, there weren't large injuries like a knee or an ankle or something that really held him back or that he had to really rehab for a long time, but still, it's injuries. It was harder, I think, for him this season than it has been in the past.
You know, when I look at this season, I mean, this was a fun-loving group that was very accessible, a good group to be around. I've personally had a lot of fun covering this team, and I think things change. You know, things change for next year. You can't recapture what they had this year because the climb. I talked to Bob Myers on the podcast several weeks ago, and give that a listen. Bob Myers was fun to talk to, the Warriors general manager, but he talked about, this was several weeks ago, before their first playoff game, mm-hmm. and he said, I hope John and Kyle enjoy the climb, mm-hmm. because that is the fun part, that climb from not a very good team to relevance. Once you, you know, once you're on that climb, mm-hmm. once you reach a certain point, it changes. Mm-hmm. And things are going to change for these guys. It's going to be a chore for Kyle Shanahan to get these guys still having fun because now there's pressure on Raheem Mostert. And I think Raheem is cut out for it, but I'm using that as an example. You know, there's pressure on Nick Bosa to come in and be a double-digit sack guy. There's pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo to prove, even though he had the four, what'd you say, the four comeback victory or fourth quarter comeback victories, there's going to be pressure on him because he played in a Super Bowl and he didn't win it. And in San Francisco, that's how you're measured. You know, Joe Montana, Steve Young. You got to win out here. That's how people measure you. There's going to be pressure on the coaching staff to continue what they're building. I don't know if this group can have as much fun as they did this year because they're not doing that climb anymore. They're not going to surprise people. It becomes now a lot of business.
This entire season, they've been thriving on the fact that they have been the underdogs. They've been the pretenders. So they've used that as motivation. So I don't think they can be under the radar anymore. Now that they've made it to the big game, that whole mentality that they have has to change. So that does change their approach to the game. It's going to change the people that are in the locker room, their attitude, their mentality, their egos. It makes a big difference.
I think the best example is within their own division. Look at what the LA Rams just went through, and they reached the pinnacle. The pressure was on, and they're still a talented team, but just missing out on the playoffs, and they feel disappointed. That pressure's not going away, and I think that that's a good example of a dynamic team with a fantastic coaching staff. And at times you lose a couple guys here. Is Eric Armstead going to come back? Maybe not. How they start allocating their salary cap math starts getting more and more complicated the better players that you have in like any higher volume and who you try to extend. So all of the drafting is good, but now to continue it, it's going to fall on those two guys at the top. Keep nailing mid-round picks, sign the right guy, spend the money the right way, and try to sustain this thing, understanding that just like George Kittle was very frank, he's like, hey, it's great that we have a good nucleus. It's great that we made it this far and that our foundation is strong and young. But getting back here is very hard.
It is very hard. And it's funny because I talked to Dre Greenlaw and I said, man, you know, you're new to this business, but, you know, when you look around and, you know, the average is about 40% of the team you know, doesn't come back. And he's like, that's the part I don't understand. He goes, why can't everybody come back? And I didn't have time to explain it to him. Yeah. But it's not just guys going off to greener pastures. Mm-hmm. It's the team making some difficult decisions. And we know, you know, some of the names who won't be back. I mean, that's kind of obvious that a guy like Mark. Marquise Goodwin, for instance, won't be back. Eric Armstead, it's going to be tough to keep him, especially, you know, the team has to prioritize. They, you know, if I were George Kittle, I don't think I'd play another snap for the 49ers on that rookie contract.
Absolutely not.
I mean, there's no reason for him to. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to get paid. Mm-hmm. He has to get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he has to get paid a lot of money before the 49ers take another snap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, DeForest Buckner. You know, he's a guy that they need to pay him. And are you going to pay him and Eric Armstead? And, you know, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So they have to make some tough decisions. You have to keep that constant churn of young players on their rookie deals, you know, minimum salary guys along with the high price guys. And now what success does for you is that it creates more higher price guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've gotten off really cheap the last 3 years with George Kittle.
True.
Well, that gravy train is over.
Mm-hmm. And is Matt Breida.
Yeah, but, I mean, Matt Breida really fell off the face of the earth here late in the season.
Jimmy Ward is also a free agent.
Jimmy Ward's a free agent. I just wonder if, you know, Tarvarius Moore is somebody that they think could, you know, fit in there at some point. But I like this quote from George Kittle. If there was a sense of disbelief that the 49ers did not win at all, and he said, yeah, that's exactly how it feels, disbelief. I thought we answered the call almost every single time this season. You know, talked about the, you know, some of the games that you're referencing to, all those, like, last-second losses. And this one kind of feels like a last-second loss, because the 49ers had the ball, they had it in their hands, they had 85 yards to go, and they didn't get it done.
Yeah, the score is a little bit lopsided for what it really was at the end. They got that quick score at the end, which kind of made the score more lopsided. It was really close, obviously, with the 10-point lead down there in the fourth quarter, but then losing it, and then really it was a tight matchup until those final, the final score.
Yeah, and I think the turning point, and I think Kittle hit this one. He said the turning point was when we got the turnover. That was the Tarvarius Moore interception at the 13-yard line when the Chiefs were going in to make it potentially a one-score game. Well, they would have. They either would have kicked a field goal or they would have scored a touchdown. So 10-point game at that time. And Tarvarius Moore picks off the deflection. And right then you're thinking, wow, Patrick Mahomes, the guy who doesn't throw interceptions, just threw his second interception. Now if the 49ers take care of business on offense like they had been doing up to that point, this game's over. My boss is going, are you going down to the locker room before the game's over? And I go, it's Patrick Mahomes. No. He goes, well, if they go up by 17 points, will you? And I said, maybe, but it's still Patrick Mahomes. And the 49ers sputtered on offense. You know, they had the opportunity to at least chew up clock and put some first downs together. And at that point, it seemed to me like they had things going. Like that offense seemed to be in rhythm. And at some point, wasn't Jimmy Garoppolo like, 18 of 21? Or, you know, he was completing a very high percentage of his passes. And then just like, I'm going to snap my fingers, just like that, it fell apart not only on offense but also on defense.
Yeah, it really did. And you can look at the three and out, and Kyle Juszczyk actually said that that's normally when our running game does things. The running game can be like a closer in baseball and just kind of eliminate opportunities and eat clock and kind of really make life or opportunities few and far between for the opponent, and they weren't able to do that. And I think that that's good character, that each guy from each position looks inward first, and that's kind of what Kyle was saying, that this run game needed to be a closer on this day, and they weren't ultimately. Defensively, they were looking at themselves. Everybody looks at turning points, whether it's Tyreek Hill's big play down the sideline. I don't know the exact coverage, but it looked to me like Richard Sherman got beat deep against Sammy Watkins, I believe, that set up another score. And those are things that defensively, like Richard Sherman has been a hero the last two games. When things may have gone differently where they didn't hear tonight.
Yeah, and the normally loquacious Richard Sherman, really short answers.
Really short answers.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, he's now played in three Super Bowls. His team has lost two of them. And, you know, I think we've talked about experience before. Well, you know, that Seattle Seahawks team won the first time they went in the Super Bowl, and then they lost the second one. So what does experience mean? You know, it doesn't mean anything. But obviously both of these teams, pretty young.
And now this word from Big O Tires.
This week at Big O Tires, buy three, get one free on select sets of four Aspen Touring AS or Mesa AP2 brand tires with paid installation purchase. See participating Big O Tire store for details. The buy three tires, get one free sale ends February 2nd. Big O Tires, the team you trust.
And, I mean, I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Patrick Mahomes. Right. Yes, he threw the two interceptions, but, man, just watching him. What a treat. And it was a pleasure to see his first Super Bowl win in person, because I got to believe, he is a transcendent star. I got to believe he's going to be back here. And for the 49ers, that's the goal, to be back here. And somebody asked Jimmy Garoppolo about that, about getting back to the Super Bowl. You know, do you think you can get back or something along those lines? Because they do have a young team. And he goes, that's a long way down the road, but we do have a young football team, a very talented football team. It's just one of those things that you have to remember this feeling and let it fuel you in the future. I also think there's a reason that Super Bowl losing teams experience a hangover.
Definitely.
Because you could feel it.
Yeah.
You could feel it.
You could.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and there were just so many plays where they were so close to getting Patrick Mahomes too. He's ridiculously effective when you think he's getting swallowed up, the pocket's closing in on him, and he just comes running out in the middle and still connects. He's really just amazing to watch.
You know what, though? There are a lot of quarterbacks like that. I mean, maybe not to the level of Patrick Mahomes, who has that uncanny ability. I mean, this is a guy who wasn't running at all during the regular season, and in the playoffs, hey, anything to get the win. But, I mean, this is kind of this the new age quarterbacks. I mean, the 49ers have faced Russell Wilson a lot. They're going to face Kyler Murray a lot. You know, they face Lamar Jackson. And now Patrick Mahomes. So, he's something special.
Yeah, I think I saw a study. He's the first quarterback ever to win MVP and a Super Bowl ring under the age of 25. That's where they are. And covering the AFC West, which is my day job, before I started moonlighting during what was an incredible playoff run by a very complete team. I've seen Patrick Mahomes play a lot of snaps and a lot of games, and nothing that he did here surprised me. And I really thought that his ability to remain even keeled and calm, and you're right, I'm not leaving the press box if the score is even remotely close.
Whatever your boss says, right?
Whatever. Because I've seen...
My boss is right. Our boss is right over there, too.
I mean, I've seen him explode for 4 touchdown passes in 8 minutes. And then, you know, after getting shut out in the first half, and just do some incredible things. And when you combine that with a lot of the things that the Chiefs have... that you think that they're going to be on this stage again, you think, but you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
But, you know, ultimately, I'm curious what you guys think, because after the Atlanta collapse with Kyle Shanahan as the offensive coordinator, he seemed to take a lot of flack for that, despite not being the head coach, maybe more than Dan Quinn did.
I think you're right.
And then now that he's a head coach, and maybe the lead wasn't quite as big, but the result was the same, would you anticipate this being something that he can't live down until he wins one? How do you think that all of the post-game reaction is going to be for him and the decisions that he made?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Andy Reid got, you know, at least public perception-wise, Andy Reid got the monkey off his back.
Right, exactly.
You know, a winning coach, a guy who's has been a great coach, was a great coach with the Eagles, always got the Eagles to the NFC Championship game, it seemed, got them to one Super Bowl. They lost that. But that was one of the storylines coming here, like Andy Reid, you know, does he finally have to win the big one in order to be considered in that next class? So, I mean, I think it's going to be this way with Jimmy Garoppolo. It's going to be this way with Kyle Shanahan. Now, Andy Reid really said, I don't give a rat's butt about any of that stuff. I just like to coach football.
Way to censor yourself right there. Nailed it.
Yeah. I have a feeling all this garbage pile up around her. There will be some rat's butts like running around.
That was like one of the most common questions that was asked to Kyle Shanahan during this entire week was, you know, talking about that loss. Should he have run it down at the end of the game? Losing that 25-point lead to the Patriots in that Super Bowl, I mean, he had to relive that over and over again this week.
Yeah, and so now it's, you know, I guess the only thing you could say about Shanahan's game, like, I don't think the play calling is to be second guessed in the fourth quarter. I just don't see anything there. But where people could second guess, and we talked about it earlier. I mean, when your general manager is up in the booth pleading for you to call a timeout, then you and I don't need to second guess him publicly. He's been second guessed by somebody far more important than us. Maybe not literally the man. Well, yeah, literally the man upstairs. True. So, but this game turned on one play, that 3rd and 15, and right before that play, 10-point game. This was it. This was a huge play for both teams, and I think we talked. Well, you didn't mention this play specifically, but what defense they're in. Emmanuel Mosley was on that side at right cornerback. Jimmy Ward was playing the deep middle, and Tyreek Hill runs that. Is that a slant and go, or that's a post, whatever, a double move, and got Jimmy Ward turned around, and then just the arm strength and the accuracy for him to just whip that ball out there was pretty amazing. And to me, right there, that's the play that won the game for the Kansas City Chiefs. Because if they don't convert that, they're punting. 49ers now can build a little bit momentum. What they didn't do on the previous drive, they could have done there. Just shortens the game. I think 49ers win the game if Patrick Mahomes, the MVP of this game, didn't make that MVP throw.
And it's crazy because if you go back to the week leading up to the Packers NFC Championship game, DeForest Buckner was talking about Aaron Rodgers talking about the wrist flick from hell.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He just running one way. It's a quick shot with all the arm strength, and that's what we saw. It was a wrist flick from hell, and it really put them in a tough bind. And it was one of those things that up until that point we hadn't seen a lot of. Explosive plays or Patrick throwing the ball more than 10 yards in the air downfield. So for them to get that big play at that big moment, you're right, was really counter to what the 49ers defense was doing a good job of preventing. They let it up in a big moment and ultimately, as you pointed out, turning point and extremely costly.
Yeah, I think for the 49ers, you know, we've talked a lot about the disappointment and where the disappointment originates from. I think when you just take a step back and you look at the journey and you see, you know, a team that went 6-10, a team that went 4-12, they had some pieces and all these things kind of came together. And then to get to this point here at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida, got to find those gardens somewhere.
They're somewhere.
But to get to that point where you're up by 10 points in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl and then like that, it's over. And then guess what the record is right now? It's 0-0.
Yeah.
And it's starting all over again. And that's why there is such thing as a Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah. They have, you know, after two seasons of the ball not bouncing their way and losing games in just the smallest margin, over and over again, not getting the turnovers, the ball's not bouncing their way, not getting interceptions, not getting those big plays. And then this season, it finally happens for them all the way up into this final game. And it's got to feel even worse, I would think, just to feel like the rug has been pulled out from underneath them.
Yeah.
You know, it's such disappointment because finally they feel like they've made it. They've, you know, had those bad seasons and it's going their way for it just to fall apart in the last few minutes of the game. It's got to be even more heartbreaking.
And here's the crazy part that you guys won't like me reminding you of. The combine is in 23 days.
Oh, gosh.
Right? That's how fast it moves, right? They're going to go out of this and, you know, start scouting, and they're going to start trying to improve these teams and make all of these difficult decisions, which is going to make this another fascinating offseason for this team that is now in the spotlight. And every move is going to be, I mean, yes, the pressure is on, but they should also kind of welcome the success that they've had and the personnel kind of structure that they've created and the great draft picks that they found in the fifth round and beyond those early rounds. But, you know, to keep building, and this thing never stops moving, and the work towards next year has already started.
Yeah, 51 weeks ago we were watching Debo Samuel turn defensive backs around and power through them at the Senior Bowl, and we saw Debo Samuel, a guy at the Super Bowl that is a cornerstone for this team. And I mean, a guy that just got to get the ball in his hands.
Yeah,
he was impressive.
He made a record. He was a record breaker today. He beat out Percy Harvin. He is now the wide receiver that holds the highest number of rushing yards. He ran three times for 53 yards, 17.7 yard average on each run play. He also was the top in receiving, five catches for 39 yards. I mean, that guy's a playmaker. Pretty amazing for a rookie who seemed to be struggling when he first got to the team. I mean, Shanahan's playbook is so hard to digest. Every player has talked about how it takes a full year to really get your head wrapped around it. And he really stepped up pretty much when Emmanuel Sanders kind of came in the door.
Yeah. And he did things that, you know, they would hope to see Dante Pettis do. You know, different types of players, obviously. But Debo Samuel really stepped up. Dante Pettis now falls in that group of, you know, year three, it's a make or break year. He better bring it or, you know, he's not going to be around. And I think, you know, some guys are in that spot where they have to kind of show what they're made of because, you know, scholarship's over for a lot of these guys as they move on to the 2020 season. Well, you know, it was a heck of a season. I really enjoyed myself from beginning to end. It was so much fun to be around this group, the coaching staff, the players. We had a good time here in Miami covering the Super Bowl. It was fun to hang out with you guys and a lot of 49er fans out there. Although there were more Chiefs fans in Miami.
Wow, that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, they broke a 50-year Super Bowl
drought.
Yeah. So party it up in Kansas City, Missouri. Heck, I'm sure even in Kansas City, Kansas, they're partying it up. So they deserve it. It was a really entertaining game. Wasn't maybe as high scoring as people would have thought it would be. But it was a grinder, like a lot of these 49er games have been this year. It just ended with a thud for the team as they look to get their sixth Super Bowl title for the 49ers organization. Still searching for that sixth. They win the first five, lose Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans, and lose again here in Miami. So, Scott, thanks for hanging out this week.
And thanks for letting me hang out and see a winning team for once.
And Jennifer, it's been a fun year.
It has been. You are right. This locker room is so much fun to cover. They've been great. You know, you can go in the locker room and really talk to anyone. There's no one that kind of shies away from the media. It's a fun group of guys. They all like each other.
Yeah.
It's been a good year.
And we'll see. We'll see how that dynamic changes, if it changes. And that's the key is, you know, like, can they get past this? You know, because the climb is so much fun, can they maintain that same sense of passion and fun for the game? And that's going to determine what happens to the 2020 49ers. So for Jennifer Lee Chan and Scott Baer, I'm Matt Maiocco. Thanks for tuning into the 49ers Insider Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the 49ers podcast anywhere you get your podcasts and leave a rating and a review. Leave the review, especially if you like it. If you don't like the podcast, you can skip that part of it. But thanks for joining us all season long on the 49ers Insider Podcast. It's been my pleasure to be your host we're not stopping. It's year-round. It's not just a football season thing. So thanks again.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.